exploding cars, exploding heads, but you don't actually want to explode anything. What do? You fix it in post. So today, we're talking with some guys who do just that today on the Fly Filmmaking.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Yes, I am so excited to talk with these guys here today. I've got James David Hatton and Matthew Lynn of VFX Legion. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, good, good. Are you having fun? You enjoying your coffee? Wink.
Yeah.
We had some jokes about making this a happy hour show.
It's really just coffee. It's fine.
Yes, but today we're talking about your amazing little company that you have here, which is not so little anymore. You guys have lots of really big clients, which I'm excited to hear all about. But first, let's introduce yourselves and tell us how you got to be where you are here today.
You first.
Matthew.
I'm Matt.
Hi.
Go by Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Went to film school in the East Coast. Started out with 3D animation and a little bit of editing and a little bit of shooting, and I was kind of like the multi-purpose guy for a while. And then I found myself editing in DC, but also doing visual effects and motion graphics, like for the stuff that I was cutting. And then I just really wanted more of a challenge and to really go for like the high-end stuff, and I wasn't really in the right city for that. So
moved. Where were you at?
In Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So a lot of like the Nat Geo, Smithsonian Network, Discovery Channel stuff. Came out to L.A. and kind of went strictly VFX after that and became a compositor mostly. We can talk a little bit more about that later, like what that actually means. But and then kind of found myself into a supervising role because I was able to connect the dots between all the different pieces of production. I can talk to an editor, I can talk to a camera department, I can, you know, I really understand how it all comes together. And so it started to make sense that, you know, as a supervising role, I can be the link that connects it all. And then I bumped into this guy.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that in production, whatever you're doing, I think it's very important to try to get to know a little bit about what all the other roles do. So whether you're in a supervising position or you're in any position, it's just good to know what everyone else is doing so you know where you fit into the puzzle or who to go yell at when something's wrong.
Yeah, knowing who to talk to is really important on
set.
Yes. Yeah. You don't just go to like the underling and say, hey, can you do a thing there? Because you have to talk to like the department head. And if you don't do that, you get glared at or yelled at.
Yeah.
So I used to think that, you know, rising to the top was almost all about how technically savvy you were and how talented and good you were, but there's a lot more to it. The politics of how to work with people, especially in entertainment, is huge. So I found myself at times almost not doing anything related to visual effects technically some days. It's all about the people and just working together.
It is a lot about the people because it is a creative collaboration on any level, whether you're post, pre, on set, all of that. It's all collaborative.
Yep.
Like, no really good project is ever going to be a one-man show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, cool. All right, James, how'd you get here?
How did I get here?
In a car, in traffic.
In a car. Burbank Boulevard. That was great. I started back in about 95. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wanted to do sound. I was writing very bad music. You'll never find it. My buddy told me to get a Mac. Macintosh computer. So I did, and he hooked me up with some software that I was able to use to sort of play around with this. And I started making like the Millennium Falcon flying around a room, and I started, you know, doing all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is so cool. You know, it's like finally something clicked. You know, it was a problem solving. It was figuring out. I was never afraid of computers, so I never had a problem like you thinking about like, you know, press the wrong button, everything goes wrong. Press the wrong button, things happen. So from there, I just started doing it. I started doing it. It was doing 3D and 2D, compositing and 3D graphics, design work. I worked up in Sacramento. I did some stuff for the California Channel, won a little Emmy thingy.
A little Emmy thingy.
Well, I got the certificate, which you can turn into a statue.
Oh.
For $200.
But you never redeemed it?
$200. No, I had no $200. Two sticks to rub together. And the guy who did it bought me a legit copy of After Effects for like $1,200. And he's like, I've already spent my
Yeah.
I've already spent the money on you, so you can get a statue.
Good.
I'm like, I'm fine. Awards aren't picked for me. That's not, like, super important. So we did that. And then in 1999, January of 99, I came down to Santa Monica to work for a buddy of mine, Mark Allen. And since then, I've just been lucky enough to land gig after gig. I've worked kind of all around town, Zoic for TV shows. I worked at ILM on Pirates of the Caribbean 3. I worked at the Orphanage doing some commercials, which is up in the Bay Area. And then smaller shops that are no longer with us,
right?
You know, as gotcha. Happens.
Which is something that this is what a very similar story to a lot of people that I know who get into the industry here, where we start knowing we want to work in entertainment, but we're not quite sure where we fit in the machine because there's so many things that you can do, and you don't even realize that there's so many things you can do until you're in it, and you're like, oh wait, I could do this or that, or I could work a lot with people, I can work with performers, I can work with the computers, I could, you know, there's so much that you can do. So it sounds like a very similar story that I've heard time and time again from other production people, that you find your way, and then like the path finds you, and then something clicks.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky that I came in with a skill set, and then somewhere in 2002, 2003, working on, I think, Mr. Deeds was the last movie I did 3D on, or it might have been Anchorman. But it was one of those movies back in the day where I still did some 3D, and then I finally just gave it up, and I just resorted to compositing because it's fine to have a split skill set, but you can never be great at all things. You know, who is? So I just started focusing on compositing, and then, you know, that's where it sort of started to take off.
Okay.
So
that's good. Yeah. I like that. And with visual effects, I want to give the audience a little bit of background in case they're not sure, they're not at the level where they're getting visual effects for their projects. What is that and how does it fit into the filmmaking process?
Okay. Well, it's interesting. If you ask someone what visual effects was 20 or 30 years ago, it was a bunch of geeks in a back room trying to figure out how to make stuff look cool. Now it's a little bit more ironed out, a little bit.
A little bit.
But, you know, for the most part...
still geeks in the dark room.
Yeah, still geeks in the back room. We don't really know what we're doing sometimes, but we find a way. And that's what keeps it interesting. It's always a new challenge, basically.
It's literally problem solving.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah, which and then, again, for our audience that is trying to learn how to produce projects... all of us are just doing the best we can and figuring it out as we go.
Right.
You might know a little bit more, but there's always something new for you to try and figure out.
Oh, yeah. It never stops.
I mean, it used to be more optical. You know, before you had computers and digital scans of your film and everything like that, you had to know a lot more about the optics and the history, or the, you know, the physics of film and light to be able to do it.
Yeah, and it was a photochemical process as well. So to like make a mat using the blue screens or the green screens, you had to make a mat chemically. Yeah. Out of the, you know.
So, you know, but the basics of it were you go out and you film something, you know, and the whole idea of visual effects is we're, you know, fixing it in post, which, but then, you know, you have to enhance that image and you separate one image from another by creating a mat. It's like a cutout, you know, and then you can put one on top of the other. That's the basics of compositing, basically. And then you can adjust the colors, which is like color grading. So visual effects is basically like three simple things, if you really think about it.
It sounds like crafting.
Basically. I mean, you could sort of do it with some pieces of paper in layers, and that would be a good representation of kind of how we're doing it digitally now.
Okay.
But it's, you know, you have your background plate, we call it, because it used to be a film plate that was scanned.
Which is great, because I brought these cutouts.
Yeah. Everyone's always like, why do you keep talking about plates? Like,
what's a plate?
Are we having dinner soon? But, so, you know, you have your background plate, and then you work from there. You may shoot some element plates or foreground plates, which are like, you know, your green screen people, your whatever's in the background. And then you have all these pieces, and you layer it together. You know, and if you think of, like, looking at it top down, you just... it's sort of as if you were doing it with craft paper, and you have to cut out what you want on top, and, you know, eventually you get a composite, which is your final image. And so that's the super odd, basic breakdown of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of have worked a little bit with After Effects, like on a really basic level. It blows my mind, but I get the layers.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of doing that, but in a digital sense.
Or Photoshop. I mean, very much the same.
Yeah, the layers
it's just
in there.
Over time.
Yeah, I mean, if you know Photoshop, then you already know visual effects. It's just our tools allow us to keyframe and animate those same effects so that you don't have to restart each frame. Mm-hmm. You know, what you do on frame one could carry over to frame 30 with some animation tools.
So, awesome. Yeah. And then you've built a business around this called VFX Legion. So I want to show a reel about what you guys do so the audience can know what you're all about.
Cool.
Now let's check it out. Very nice, guys. So that is what VFX Legion does. You guys have a lot of pretty fancy shows in there.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff.
Yeah? All right, so tell me a little bit about where VFX Legion is now, what kind of projects you're working on now before we get into some of the more indie stuff that you've done.
Burbank. We're in Burbank. No,
we've done all of Burbank.
But we're also everywhere.
We're everywhere, yeah. We have a remote model, so we're our artists are literally all over the world.
Right.
We have some here. In town, some in the office, but by and large, they're you name it.
Right.
New Zealand, Germany, England.
Right, because I had seen in this other interview that I saw of you where you mentioned that you can have people working on these projects 24 hours a day.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah. And, you know, really quick, and one of the biggest draws, I think, to Legion is we combine, like, high-level talent and experience, but we also give all these people the quality of life of, like, not living in L.A. or not chasing tax credits, you know, not having to up and move their families every 6 months or every 2 years to go to Vancouver and then over to London and then to Australia, because now they can work from home and they get to work on cool stuff, but they don't have to run around all over. You
know? Yeah, they can have, like, a good quality life, build their roots somewhere else or where they already have roots and still work.
Or go back to where they grew up, or they want to, you know, have kids, and they want to do it with family support and not have to live in, you know, a big city, very expensive city.
Yeah. Right. Because I would say, you know, L.A. is not for everybody.
No, it's...
Oh, yeah.
No.
It's yeah, it can wear on you.
Yeah. But,
and you know, the fear of going back home is, oh, what am I going to do? Like, what kind of people will I work for?
The skill set that I've got now, what the hell can I do out in the world?
Yeah, so now you can go home or wherever you want, but you still get to be a part of, like, a bigger thing and work on some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's a really great business model, and I bet your employees are happier for it.
I think so.
You have like more productivity. I hope so.
Yeah.
Happy people.
What would they say to the boss? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Better be happy.
Better be happy.
So in the shows that we're working on right now, we're working on doing a little work for Suits.
Okay.
How to Get Away with Murder and Scandal are just starting to kick into production for
What are those shows?
It's just a little show. It's on the TV thing. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Scandal, this is their last season. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of excited to see what they want to do.
Yeah.
I think they want to go out with a bang.
They want to go out with a bang?
Yes. See.
I'm suggesting somebody skydiving out of Air Force One, but there weren't any takers in the meeting we had today.
Oh, so. Okay.
We'll see. We'll see. It's early. It's early. I think if I just nudge enough, maybe we can make it happen.
You just do it anyway and be like, I made this for you.
Yeah.
Here you go.
And then also over the summer, it tends to be a little slower because network TV shows generally shoot from kind of a August to March, April sort of schedule. So over the summer, we tend to fill our things with independent movies, smaller projects, helping people out, stuff like that.
Good. I love it. So, like, you work with everyone on like, the entire scale of filmmaking, from indie to, you know, very, very big shows like Scandal.
Yeah.
You know, like, one of the biggest shows that's out right now that, you know, people are into. And I love the scale between the two. Like, we have another reel that we're going to show in just a moment from, is it a movie, Hardcore Henry?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a movie, and it's, the quality of work is just as good, but you can tell that it's a low-budget kind of project. It feels indie.
It was a really ambitious. It was a really ambitious idea that Ilya had. He did a music video in this style, and then got Timur. I would kill his last name. He's a relatively famous Russian film producer, and he got on board with the idea of making a 2-hour version of this movie. Of this guy doing parkour, and it's all from the first person.
Yeah.
And originally they had set it up to be 2 GoPros, one for each eye, to make it a stereo, meaning 3D, parkour movie, all first person.
Wow.
There's like 3 cutaways to a red camera in the whole movie.
But it's a GoPro movie.
It's a GoPro movie.
Which are very affordable cameras to like try and make a product. So let's check that out. This is the reel for Hardcore Henry.
We'll be right back.
Awesome. I really enjoyed watching this one. If you go to VFX Legion's Vimeo page, there's a lot of different reels that you can see that they really showcase the before and afters that of what they do. So talk to me about this project.
This project was a long time in the making. we were approached by post-producer, post-supervisor.
Scott.
Yeah. Scott Farrar. There's two Scott Farrars in the world.
Oh.
This is not the one that is from ILM or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this is...
Hello to both Scott Farrars,
you
if you're
are
out
both
there.
Great. Yeah, yeah. Scott showed it to us, I want to say, almost 3 years ago. And we had seen two or three of the reels. So with the way larger films are made, they're broken mm-hmm. up into reels. They still do that, even though it's all digital now. But we had seen two or three of the reels, and it was just mind-blowing, like, just watching this. And it had all the wires. It had all the weird jump cuts. Not everything was smooth. But you could look at it and be like, I know what this is. I know what he's trying to do. I really want to work on this. Mm-hmm. And so
you guys saw the film. Like, you were not contracted to work on it for visual effects until after it was already shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, because I wanted to ask you guys, like, if you are on set or not. Are you part of the planning? So, like, it sounds like for Scandal, you were in a meeting for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
most of the TV shows were there from start to finish.
Uh-huh.
And a number of the, like,
features
feature stuff, I want to say Insidious. Sinister, we came in late, but there for reshoot. Sinister 2, stuff like that. We were all part of kind of the creative process and help making it work. This one, we were not. He had a supervisor in Russia. The whole thing shot in Russia, and it was an exciting project to look at. And there's a song and dance routine where the same character comes in dressed as different people because he's multiple. People, they just like have bodies that are him. He's like a clone, and he's controlling the clone. He's like actually a quadriplegic, and he's controlling the clone. It's mental, but there's like a whole song and dance routine. And while we didn't work on that scene, thankfully, because it would have been nearly impossible, because much of this movie was nearly impossible to do.
Very hard.
That's I can't describe the. So I would say, never shoot a movie with a GoPro expecting to do visual effects.
Okay.
Because it is very, very difficult. The lens distortion. Mm-hmm. They have such a wide field of view. They can take in a whole, you know, from here, if I held a GoPro here, we could see, like, almost, 180 degrees.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The problem is, like, the center stuff is kind of normal, but as you go out towards the edges, mm-hmm. it all just warps.
It does,
so any straight line is now curved.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're trying to put a CG object that is straight into that, you have to match that curve. And that is not easy.
Okay.
So although, you know, the approach was pretty, this wasn't a super huge budget film,
mm-hmm.
the challenge for visual effects was actually of the highest level for us, you know. But it was, like you said, when we first saw the film, we were really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like, a good challenge to take on. But technically, like, it was a lot of work.
It was a beast.
Yeah,
right.
It was a beast.
So, and it's not necessarily GoPro footage. It's GoPro in the wide angle setting. So if it, or is it all GoPro footage? Like, whether it's in
I believe
not wide
that
or not?
The most recent GoPro has a slightly less wide angle lens option.
Oh, no.
But
this was 3 years ago.
This was like the GoPro 3.
Yeah, they have like 10
like
GoPros
that.
Since then.
It was 4K footage originally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was huge. They knocked it down to 2K because they did what's called a 2K DCP release,
mm-hmm.
digital content projection, I think it stands for. So they knocked it down and made it smaller. That only made like the space requirements on our servers smaller.
Okay.
The work is still just as difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so then it sounds like to me that there's a few different production timelines for what you guys do. So like with the larger projects, you have a meeting, they have concepts, you're like, this is what we can do. They shoot around what you guys can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
a large part, yeah.
Yeah, but, what can be accomplished and how much it costs.
Okay.
Because that's like one of the biggest limiting factors or
mm-hmm.
contributing factors to what you can do in visual effects.
Right.
Because as we go into every meeting, like the meeting today, we can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some shots on our reel of the White House, and they're up on what's called the Truman Balcony, which is the second floor of the back. And we're up high looking down. And that was an angle that's never been used in the up to 6 years until the season, that's last season, they had never done that.
Okay.
And suddenly they just shot it. Just on set one day with him.
They wanted to try that angle, and so we had to recreate all of that in full CG because there was no way to, you know, use still images or anything like that. And so that was...
So it goes from a shot that's like a normal cost that they're expecting to being like 2.5 times mm-hmm. the cost.
Because you're having to build something from scratch.
Way more labor. Yeah. You have to, you know, track it in 3D. You have to get a 3D model. You have to light it. You have to texture it. You have to make everything look right so that it looks photoreal.
There's always a big jump between 2D... methodology and 3D. So 2D could be like just what we were talking about earlier, compositing, layering different background images and stuff, but the acquisition of those images are usually done in camera or something. 3D, like once you go down the 3D pipeline, just render time and talent and so artists, I mean, it's just
people.
A lot more money.
It's all about people.
One of the big things we try and do with our clients is like help them understand the jump and the difference. Like, if you do it this way, there's a lot of, you know, 2D hackery that we can do, and it can look really good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it this way, you're going to be backed into 3D, so you better be ready for the budget, you know, and also time. You know, with our TV shows, sometimes they're not even as concerned about the budget. Maybe they have the money, and they just want it to be great. But if we only have 2 weeks to do the whole thing, you know, we need to temper their expectations so that they don't give us, you know, 500 shots to do in 2 weeks. You know?
Yeah, definitely. So then give me a little background. I think I'm a little confused. The difference between a 2D and a 3D on your end. I know what that is. Like, it's like when you're saying 3D, it's not necessarily with 3D glasses on.
Yeah, so that's
okay.
That's the funny thing. Okay, so there's a mix of terms here. So I use the word stereo. Because that's kind of gone from the lexicon for audio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one talks about stereo anymore. It's 5.1, it's Dolby, it's Atmos. It's, you know, we've lost stereo.
Okay.
So I
You're
use...
taking it.
Yeah.
You're claiming it for yours.
Somebody did. I am just glomming onto it.
Okay, it's a good idea.
Yeah, so we call it stereo, which is stereo vision. So 3D, the theaters still call it 3D, but like in this world of production, if somebody says it's a stereo project, we say no. So there's that. So there's CGI, which is a term that kind of makes us angry, because it's used just so widely.
Computer-generated image. So
yeah.
Technically,
the computer did everything. Yeah.
Anything
the artist
that we do now is technically CGI.
Right.
A lot
right.
of people who are thinking about terms that were thrown around maybe 10 or 15 years ago, CGI was used more to suggest like. The computers that were doing the early 3D visual effects. So CGI today usually is used to replace saying, you know, like three-dimensional graphics or animation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why he was saying it annoys him, because technically it just means anything computer-generated, which is everything now. So
everything is computer-generated.
But, like, you know, the basics of visual effects, 2D is anything that's like in After Effects, in Photoshop, you know, just... either painting or color correction or compositing different layers. That's all what we consider the 2D side of visual effects. And it can still look great and it can still be very complex, but generally speaking, it's a little more cost effective and faster to do.
Mm-hmm.
3D, on the other hand, if you look at like the beginning of a reel, so you got the guy standing there, there's just green everywhere, right? And then it cuts to a picture of Marine One. And a background. The Marine One is a 3D object. It was rendered in Redshift. It was all laid out in Maya. And we turn around and we look at her running up Kerry Washington's character, which is...
Liv. Olivia.
Olivia, right. She's running towards the camera. Behind her is a digital White House. That's a...
full 3D White House.
Yeah. Is it the White House? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so then it's like, so with a 3D thing that you guys have built, then that means like you can make a camera angle that would kind of move around?
Yeah, yeah. We can place it anywhere in that space.
Gotcha.
So what we do is we give it to our tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson is the guy who does our
what?
Tracking. That's his name.
That's where
he
went?
It's real. No,
great.
That's his real name. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and he does our tracking, so we give the shots to him, and he lays out, he takes our model, and he puts it in the scene, and he lays it out so that the camera that's on set that moves matches the camera in our computer that moves, and then we put the building in there, and then we light it, we throw in lights.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have a render of the 3D, and then you always go back to 2D. I mean, there's no VFX shot that doesn't involve the final step of 2D compositing. You just take all your pieces, you put it together, and you make it look like something real.
Okay.
So the only difference with the 3D is instead of, say, shooting a foreground green screen plate and then a background plate of the actual White House from, like, a relatively similar camera angle,
mm-hmm.
and then just putting one on top of the other, like, we're replacing that 2D, that background plate with something that we completely generate in 3D.
Gotcha, so, okay. So versus, you know, like, a flat image with a flat image in front
exactly.
of it, you've got a 3D model behind
right.
this other image.
And obviously to make something that's completely computer-generated look photoreal mm-hmm. is a lot more work
yeah.
than just putting two real images together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
I wouldn't have known that White House was fake.
Yeah.
I would have maybe guessed
it
was
came
a
out
set,
well.
But I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, they shot that in Griffith Park.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
nice.
So, which is a little park here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The grounds don't look anything like the White House grounds.
Yeah, we had to replace the grass.
We literally had to take out gopher holes.
Okay.
And all the stuff that's in the grass. So half the grass is a digital replacement.
And hikers and mm-hmm.
it had to get rid of the hikers
yeah.
and the looky-loos.
Yeah.
And you know everyone
also,
gets blown away.
So then with that kind of project, are you guys on set for that?
Yeah. And so for two reasons, it's really important that we're involved in the whole process. One, they only have so much of a budget. And then two, the timeline of television, it's very accelerated. I mean, from the time where the writer's room comes up with the idea to the time it airs, I mean, sometimes it's like less than 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to facilitate every step to make sure that nobody bites off more than they can chew.
Right.
You know? So I'll be there reading the scripts, helping them with the initial, you know, budgets and just figuring out if we're all sort of on the same page, and then we're there on set and we work with, you know, the DP and the director very closely to make sure both on the technical and creative side we're still going in the direction that we need to, but all the while thinking like, oh, are we doing something that's going to be a problem later, and you know that's, and so we have to be there for on set.
Okay.
And then kind of hands off to James and the team in the office for post, and now, then they figure out how to actually make it work.
Yeah, that's such a quick turnaround, because when you guys get that, it's a week and a half, maybe?
So
yeah.
When there's big 3D things, now that we've established what 3D is, once there are 3D things, we generally ask to get stuff as soon as possible,
mm-hmm.
like so we can get like maybe a two-week lead time. What happens on these shows is as the season progresses, things start to slip a little. So what mm-hmm. happens is the show locks. If a hard delivery is on Tuesday morning, hypothetically, that may not be the case. It's Tuesday morning. we'll sometimes get our plates, which is the background, the things that we need to work with. We'll get those on a Friday.
Okay.
And so we have to turn around anywhere from 20 to 100 shots over the weekend. So
who needs a weekend?
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it just becomes like, that's the thing. That's
mm-hmm.
that's how that works.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't mind. The people are great to work with. They have a really great crew over there. So, you know, everyone knows everyone because they're working too. They're working
yeah.
probably more than we are.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So it's a huge team effort between, you
yeah.
know, VFX Legion and the people at Shondaland to make stuff like that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Movies, you get a longer time. Independent movies, generally longer unless you're trying to save their butts at the very end. They're
yeah.
in color and they're having troubles trying to get things working. They're like, can you help us?
Yeah.
There's a wire. There's a cameraman in the reflection.
How do we
you
make
know?
This right?
yeah.
All right.
So sometimes that'll
good.
Be a rush.
But. So then, but for the Hardcore Henry one,
yeah.
you guys got that all after the fact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Did the director like have a vision for what he wanted, or was like, here, make it right?
No, he really had a very clear vision. Ilya is, it was a first-time director,
mm-hmm.
so he had some first-time nerves going into like their initial screening at the Toronto Film
mm-hmm.
Festival.
Yeah.
But he did, he had a great vision. He had a great attitude. He could communicate really well.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the office and we just sat and looked through things. So I have a standing desk and they would come in and they would stand there and we'd just be looking at things on the computer and like, what do you think? He's like, yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay.
So
yeah.
he like really knew what he wanted. And I think we gelled really well with him, which I think is why it worked so well.
Good.
It's like we knew the look. Like once we had done that shootout in the, it was a brothel, not going to lie.
Yeah.
But once they did that shootout in the brothel, they were like, okay, carte blanche, just, you know, make it look cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to make it look cool.
All right. Is that movie available to see on Netflix or anything like that?
Not sure.
Maybe
check your listings.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Check your listings.
Yeah.
Google it. We'll find out where Hardcore Henry is, and there are other projects from VFX Legion that you can find. Like mm-hmm. all of the, not all of the Blumhouse movies. Maybe I'm not sure. Is it all of them?
No, but
a lot of them.
We've done a good
was it Insidious and Purge movies?
We did two of the Purge movies. We kind of picked up cleanup stuff on the second Purge. We worked a good deal of work on Election Year, which is the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
Sinister 2.
Incarnate?
Oh, we did some fix work for Incarnate, yeah.
Stretch.
Okay. Stretch. Oh, yeah. Stretch. Close to my heart.
Oh.
If you guys haven't seen Stretch, Joe Carnahan's movie. He wrote it, directed it, everything. It is great. It is funny. It's got Chris Pine in it. David Hasselhoff has a cameo.
It's called Stretch?
It's called Stretch.
Okay.
The love interest is Jessica Alba.
Okay. I want to see this.
It's really funny. Yeah. The script, he didn't get to shoot at all. We didn't get to include everything. But there are early versions of the script that I just laughed the entire time.
Nice.
And then to like be on set and watch Chris Pine come in half naked with like kabuki makeup on that's all messed up. And just he delivered like an over-the-top performance the first time out. And it was just, we were all dying. I mean, like literally they couldn't use the takes because everyone was laughing.
That's great.
It was probably all me laughing, but...
Yeah.
And you can't take that out in post. James, be quiet.
Really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Who's cackling in the background?
Who is that? Slap him in the face.
Shut up, visual effects.
If only actually had to paint you out of the movie.
Get away from Chris Pine, sir. Get away from Chris Pine.
Stop trying to touch him.
Awesome. So I want to talk to you about maybe some production fails. Like, what are times where there was maybe something that you wanted to do, it did not come out as well as you wanted?
Matt, you fail a lot, so...
that's like once a week, at least.
What have you been yelled at for?
Well, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on a film
set.
Yeah,
I can't imagine.
And a lot of times, not everybody really understands the nuances of the recipe, you know? And a cameraman may have their own idea of what a move should be, but it doesn't really work with the methodology that we went through. So, you know, it's actually pretty often... I wouldn't call it a full-on fail, but it's pretty often it doesn't go as planned.
Right.
But that's what we do. We find a way to make it work later.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two, just as an example of, like, I want to describe, like, the poor man's process,
mm-hmm.
which I think a lot of people are going to use. So there are repeating heads on cameras, you know, or a crane that does the same move every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they used to do visual effects. I mean, Star Wars. They would have a camera that they would program to go around the ship, and it looks like the ship's going around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that thing, but it's expensive to rent those.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has access to them, so they'll do like, I'm holding my camera and I'm going around it, and then, you know, change the lighting a little bit, I'm going the camera and around it, thinking that you could line those up together later.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do that with like people and backgrounds, and it's like, well, it's a different background on a different day, we'll just do what they did, and they'll try and line it up, they'll look at the little video tap and be like, yeah, no, we got this, yeah, we totally got this.
And
this is going to be great. Visual effects, you love us. We do such a good job.
And then we get the footage, and it's just, they don't line up.
Nothing lines up. It's like, this camera was 3 feet off the ground, and this one was 8 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
So, you know, when it's almost like the sky's the limit with what we can do, that mentality is on set a lot.
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is like, yeah, we can do anything, but we have time and budget and creative vision to keep in mind. We can't just do anything in any situation. And so, but there's people who are like, well, I mean, I just saw Gravity and they like made outer space. So why are you having a problem with this? And I'm like,
yes.
Come on, it's totally different. But you know, you get that a lot. So
come on, Legion. It's black with specs.
Yeah.
Do it. Don't you like put some glitter in a cup and then like layer it over? I watched that Enterprise behind the scenes when I was little.
Yeah.
Oh, right. The transporter effect.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, in nerd talk, in Next Generation, they had duvetine, which is this thick black material that they poked holes through and had a light behind it. And that was the starfield outside the windows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's way cheaper than having a blue screen or something, which they had to do when they were in warp.
Mm-hmm.
Irrelevant. I'd say the biggest fail in visual effects is when somebody says, fix it in post.
Yes.
When they're shooting it, and they're like, nah, fix it in post.
Eh, it's somebody else's problem now.
And it's just like, that's like, because right there, that's the fail. Like,
yes.
You've just admitted that you mm-hmm. can't do it. You didn't think about it. You didn't plan for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sounds funny because everyone kind of,
right.
They do that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me on set, the biggest fail for me is when something happens and I didn't see it coming and it wasn't communicated well. And I'm like, well, that's going to hurt us later.
Yes.
That's going to hurt.
In any level of production, any department that you're in, that's going to happen. So much of production is just like, here's a problem, let me fix it. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Awesome. So then tell me about a triumph. Like, what is, like, one of your favorite things that you guys have accomplished? And you're like, yeah, we did that.
Well, I think with murder.
Well, if I get up in the morning, that's kind of a big
get
up. That's a big win for me.
Get up in the morning.
I'm awake
by you know, 1 p.m. or something.
Okay, guys, it's summer. I can go to work late now.
Yeah, right. Well, I know murder last year, How to Get Away with Murder, was really pushing the limits, not only for a TV schedule, but pushing our limits. We took on a house that burns and explodes.
Okay.
And so we were doing fire, explosion, water.
Water.
So these are all computer generated simulations and like dynamics using physics calculations.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to light it and render it and fit it into the camera moves that they did on set. And I think early on in the season, the production side was sort of like, are you guys sure you can do this?
Yeah.
Everyone was really kind of nervous.
Yeah, really apprehensive.
And I mean, we worked really hard on that stuff.
Yeah.
And within a couple of episodes, we had some really good looking stuff. And
they were sort of like, we showed them the first one and they were like,
oh, okay. Okay, we're good.
We can do this.
So that felt great.
And then they asked it to go bigger.
I know. Then they just wanted
to explode.
And more and more.
And then it'd be burned.
Yeah.
It's like when the season started, they didn't have a clear idea of what the level of house burn was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our first question. It's like, well, where are we going with this? You know, that determines how it burns, the motivation. What's my motivation?
Yeah.
They're like, well, we don't really have any idea.
Oh,
so
we just know we want this.
It just needs to burn now. Can you burn it now? And I'm like, yeah, fine. Yeah,
okay.
We'll make it burn. So we made it burn, and then we get a script for episode 3.
You're playing like Usher in the background.
Episode 3.
And they're burning it more.
Episode 3, that's like, well, okay, on fire, they're hitting it with things, and then episode 4, it's kind of burned.
Yeah, I think after a couple of those shots came out looking pretty good, the writer's room was like, oh, so that we can pretty much do whatever we want.
meanwhile, the producers are like, money. No.
Don't spend that money.
Yeah.
They're like, don't give them the candy.
Exactly.
Don't give them the candy. Awesome.
Yeah.
So for our on-the-fly filmmakers, people who are just starting out or they don't have access to like paying for this, what can they do? What kind of tips and tricks do you have for them? Get it in camera at the beginning?
Save your money and pay for it? No.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. As much as I love visual effects, and that's what we do, if there's a way to do it in camera, old school filmmaking, always do it practically.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the art to that has been lost at times, and people rush to fix it in post, but find a way to do it in camera, and everyone's going to be happier. So that's actually my first piece of advice.
Yeah, there's like driving shots. A lot of times people want to do green screen. They want to like default to green screen because they don't want to process car or whatever. And there are some small movies. Lowriders is a really great example that we worked on and I think is out now. Go see it. Ricardo, the director, chose to
shoot it practically.
And it's got the bumps and it's got the things. And, you know, it's really gritty and really visceral. It's like a car chase towards the end of the movie where everyone dies. I'm kidding.
No, not every, spoilers.
Nope. Okay, now you don't have to see the movie. No,
okay.
I kid.
See the movie.
It's a great movie. Go see it.
Yep. Yeah. And then, you know, I think the next thing is, like, what's the best bang for your buck? You know, because, with visual effects, you can make something reality that maybe you couldn't have shot normally. But don't go crazy. Figure out, like, where is it really worth it? And, you know, how can visual effects help the most?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times with independent projects, they have limited resources, limited budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to walk them through, like, well, I think if you focus this on visual effects and just find a way to do these practically, like, it's better than spreading yourself thin everywhere.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
And I think lastly, for the kind of aspiring filmmaker, if you aren't afraid of machines, aren't afraid of computers, the Adobe After Effects, the Creative Suite license
is really
$40 or $50 a month.
Yeah,
really,
which is
cost effective.
You know, nominal. If you've decided to get a camera and some audio gear and things and go out and shoot something, you've got $50 a month to spend on this. And learn some of the basics. You know, learn titling, learn how to pull a blue screen or a green screen so that you can just put up a thing and you can transport to another world. You know,
and be anywhere. And don't reinvent the wheel. I still do this today. I see something and I think, wow, that looked great. How did they do it? And I go find on YouTube, you can find almost anything. Mm-hmm. You find the breakdown of how they did it.
Yeah.
Figure out what you want. Find someone else who's already done it. Watch the breakdown that they show and dissect the shot. And anybody can figure out how to film some pretty basic visual effects the right way if they just look at how someone else did it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's a great tip is, you know, research what you want to do before you go out and shoot it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've definitely done that myself. There's a few different projects where I was like, I know I wanted to have, it's just floating somewhere on YouTube from like a decade ago, but I wanted to have like a Mario block floating, you know, so I was like, oh, like the tennis ball tracking thing, you know, and so the person I was working with at the time, I was like, you know, he wanted to learn how to track on a tennis ball. I was like, well, let's make a little project out of this that can be shared later to practice this. So we did that, and I, like, hit the block, and then I made a mushroom that we, like, floated onto the ground.
Very cool.
It, like, looks ridiculous, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and then the mushroom was on wheels, and then we pulled it with a, like, fishing wire.
Very cool.
You know?
That's cool.
Just so you can practice, because you have to try.
You have to try, and practice makes perfect. And, you know, it's really amazing the things that you have access to nowadays. With an iPhone and a laptop, you can do pretty decent visual effects, you know, or at least test your theory until you go to your actual shoot day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, like, crawl before you fly, you know? Like, try little things first, or don't expect it to be scandal-level explosions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When it's your first try.
No, I again, going back to how I started, you know, just kind of bring it full circle, I was in my bedroom on a computer, like, making, I'm like, oh, I can do this, and it was a learning experience. I was terrible for, arguably, you know, 20 years, but I was terrible for, like, 2 years before I could do anything where I could really get something that was, like, convincing.
Okay.
And then we started doing, like, there were some commercials where we had to put a sign by the road, one of those video screens that were trying to sell the idea of doing video billboards.
Yeah.
And so I had to track this thing, and I had to put this 3D thing in there and make it look real. And that was, like, one of the first successful things I did, but that was 2 years after I started doing it.
Yeah.
So don't expect results overnight.
Nice.
Is all I'm saying.
And then one last thing for me, study photography, because people get caught up in the details of visual effects, the tech stuff. Oh, what's the background plate? This, that. But just study photos, light and shadow. If you're good at understanding how it should look, you'll be good at visual effects. Like, take a step back, just look at the frame. How should it look?
Yeah.
And maybe just go out with a still camera and take some test shots, and that's going to take you far.
Okay, good. So, like, what other kind of advice do you have for people starting in VFX? So, like, I like that. Are you saying take a still photo and then try to recreate it?
Sometimes, or just get comfortable with how it should look. You know, maybe you can't film it with visual effects right off the bat, but you can go out and take a photo of something and be like, well, this is what it should look, and then, you know, you can go backwards from there.
Yeah. And I actually love what you just said, where you're like, you didn't study photography. There's no right way.
For
anything in creative fields or in anything in life, I suppose. You just there's a way to do it.
Yeah,
to do
I probably should have. But,
is this why you just hire other people to do your stuff?
Old dog, new tricks. But, you know, I look at the people who I really respect. My friend Todd up at ILM, and he's always referencing movies. He's always referencing what he sees, you know. And he's a fan of films. So it's like, look at what you want. Look at nature. Look at the world around you. If you see... sometimes you'll see steam coming out of something. It's got a black line around it. Like, if we did that in visual effects, they'd be like, why is there a black line around it? It's like, I was matching reality. Okay, well, you have to cheat reality. But if you start from a place that is real, then the trip to getting it final, to get it done, to make it look good or great, is a lot shorter trip.
Good.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Study reality.
Look around. Love that. Study reality. Look around, put your phone down, see what's going on in real life.
But
then, like, put your phone up and then take pictures of it and then look at it.
Yeah.
So, really, whatever you want to do, just do it.
Document it.
Awesome. Yeah. And then I love that you guys said that you guys use Adobe products. Like, I always tell everybody when they're asking me about editing and things like that, I was like, get Creative Suite, just learn it. There's, of course, tons of different programs you can use, but I like Adobe Premiere because it works well with Photoshop.
Our
it works
reels
with
were cut with Premiere.
After Effects is really powerful. Probably one of the most powerful software packages you can get for that price.
Nice.
Yeah, again, with the price, because I've got to tout the Foundry's Nuke and Autodesk's Maya.
Okay.
As, like, Maya is a 3D package, Nuke is a compositing package.
Okay.
Nuke Studio. Those are kind of the high-end stuff, and they're not going to be for the beginning filmmaker.
Yes.
But know that that is, like, a goal. After Effects does everything. It does a lot of things, but there's a different world there in what's called nodes versus layers. They're two different beasts, and if you aspire to do visual effects, know that you can get a free version of Nuke, and you can mess around with it and do things.
Great.
It's well worth knowing, and it makes you valuable to the industry.
Yeah. If you want to work in the industry in the compositing path, you want to learn Nuke eventually.
Good.
If you want to be in 3D, you want to learn Maya.
Okay.
But if you're just playing around Cinema 4D. Yeah.
Right. If you're still just trying to get your footing and figure out where you want to go, and if you're working on your independent projects and you just want to dip your toes into some VFX, then go get yourself After Effects. It's really a super affordable.
It is.
If you're trying to work on stuff, and it gives you so much to work with. So thank you so much, guys, for joining me today. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, except you don't exist on the internet, but they can find your company.
Yeah, they can find at VFX Legion. You can follow me if you can find me on Twitter. I won't give it out because I'm...
tagged him on my Twitter.
Okay. I was going to say, my views don't necessarily represent my company. So,
okay, but definitely follow VFX Legion on Instagram, on Twitter. You can also find a lot of their reels on Vimeo, where you can see a lot of their work.
And our website's great because it has we have a lot of Artist of the Month stories. Almost every artist that we have has a story on there. And it's where did they come from? What are they doing? How did they get there? Stuff like that. So it's really interesting to read, you know, everyone's history, how they did this.
I love that. Everybody started from somewhere, and it's usually not where they are now.
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us for On the Fly Filmmaking. I'm Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me on all social media at Mary Lou Mandel, and we will see you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.